Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
As we welcome him, our insider from the insiders, our man James Hamm, fresh from the Golden One Center and Exit Interviews. Hammer, off-season starts today, man. I guess I'll start with a generic-ass question and What's your takeaway from, you know, you heard from just about everybody today. What was your biggest takeaway from exit interviews at G1C? James, we can't hear you. Are you on mute?
Well, James.
James is in full off-season mode. He's to hell with this. Okay, James says, hang on.
He figured it out. He didn't figure it out. We're about to get it popping again.
Yeah, James, he's probably going to go construct an entire
new
setup.
The stream says they hear him.
Why can't I hear him?
I don't know.
Can you hear him?
I can't hear him.
Cannot hear him, and if we can't hear him, radio can't hear. Radio cannot hear him either.
That's the first and foremost. Sorry, stream.
That's fantastic. The stream can hear him.
That was so bizarre.
That is bizarre. The stream can hear him. But we can't, which means the radio can't, which means this is all quite fascinating.
All right. Let's talk amongst yourselves. Looks like he's getting it together. It's loading.
James. You know. James.
Silent movie stinks.
So, James, it looks like your screen is muted. Like on it, because I see the line through the mic. Is it possible your mic is muted?
No.
No. All right.
Old school Hamm on the phone.
No. James, you want to? I still don't have it. You want to try a reset? I don't know what it is. It's still fascinating that the stream can hear you and we can't.
Real quick though, to kind of answer the question that I asked you. Man, people aren't going to like this. I feel like those things are fixable. I think they're fixable with a reset of the season, going through a season and being like, hey, Mike Brown saying, tried to tell you guys the whole time, and you probably didn't listen. You listening now? And maybe missing the playoffs catches that group's attention or whatever. Look, that's not what I would try to do. I wouldn't say, oh, no, don't worry. We'll just run it back. Like, I'd be trying to, you know, work back channels or do whatever I have to do to improve the roster. But if we came to a scenario where, you know, it's largely the same roster, I think they can still improve off of the record they had this year.
James, are the Kings issues from this year fixable? Please be able to hear.
No.
Still can't. I don't know what it is. Is it something in here? Hang on, James. I swear to God, if it's freaking Kyle Madsen again, say something now, James. Nope, it's not. Okay, I don't have to kill Kyle. That's a relief.
Well, thank you.
That's a relief. Thank God. I thought I was going to have to kill Kyle.
Once again, the stream can't hear him. That's crazy. That is crazy.
Well, talk to the stream, James. The hell with us. Okay, so this can't be heard on the radio, right?
That's crazy. No, because I tried playing a clip on that computer earlier, and I guess the stream could hear it, but the radio couldn't either. So
that's
the craziest
thing.
James,
you've never experienced this before.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. I'm kind of just... a little too early to go to commercial. I'm just trying to do a quick diagnostic check of everything in here. I don't know what it is. James is fine there, good there. Nothing looks out of the ordinary. We might just have to get James on the phone, as stupid as that is.
It doesn't have anything to do with this one over here, right? Should I close it or...
No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. Huh. Let's just all sit here and look at each other. Let's do that.
James, maybe try one more thing or something like that while he tries that. The way I broke it down just now, though, with this team, like, is that inconceivable? Like, hey, you just come back, you learned your lesson, come back next year with this team and Malcolm Brogdon, and they're going to be Malcolm Brogdon, actually like a 97% free throw shooter. So he would help there. But I don't know. I don't want to come back with the same group, but I do feel like if they couldn't make a deal to improve, I feel like they could still up their win total next year.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I'm just clicking buttons trying to figure out what might get James. I'm literally just clicking things, hoping to hear background noise at James's house, and it's not working at all. Oh, James got a good idea. Maybe just log in through your phone. If I hit that, James... Oh, I'm clicking stuff, and James has...
We got James Hamm on the phones.
Okay, James. James is on the phone. Can you pot him up?
You got me?
Yeah, we got you. We got you.
What the hell are we?
This is as low budget as 95.7 right now. My goodness. What a mess. Okay, James. Where do we try to get this conversation on track with? Let's start with takeaways from... I'll keep wanting to call it Media Day. Goodbye, Media Day, I guess is what it is.
Yeah, it's exit interviews. Okay, so my takeaway is, number one, it felt like the team, a lot of the players had just come from like a little bit of a wake in the back, where they're all kind of coming to the realization that this might be the last time that this group is together, whether that's, you know, some of these guys getting traded or it's Malik Monk walking out the door. And so that's kind of what the biggest takeaway was. A lot of the guys were pretty emotional about like just the way that what Malik has meant to them. A lot of players in exit interviews said, you know, Malik is pretty much their best friend on the team. And I think that speaks to who Malik is. He's a guy who connects that way with so many people, where they all feel like he's something like special to them. And I think that's a really, you know, good, unique, like sort of personality trait that Malik has. But I also think that, you know, they all understand this is a business. I know Domas was more forceful, like we've got to figure out how to fix this thing and how to get him back. Everyone else was more of the, you know, like, well, look, he's put himself in a great position and he's got to do what's best for him and his family. And, you know, it's not like we won't see him anymore if he does leave. And so I thought that was all unique. I thought the way that Malik kind of handled himself was very unique, borderline like emotional a lot of the time, not knowing whether this is going to be sort of his last time in Sacramento in front of like this group of media people who, you know, for the most part, we're all a tight group. But I also think Malik feels like he's part of the family just because of the way he's always treated us and the way that we treat him. So it was kind of an interesting day for that. And, you know, look, Malik Monk isn't gone yet. But the fact that he said he would, if it were the best of all possible worlds, he would be back in Sacramento. I think that that's a plus. I think the fact that he put it out there that he really wants to start, that's a negative for Sacramento. And so I don't know how this whole thing will work out, but that was kind of the biggest takeaway from media day. Well, from exit interviews.
Yeah.
I want to stay with Malik real quick, though. You know, nobody knows, you know, exactly what's going to happen. But was there a vibe or a sense that you got? I know you spoke about it a little bit. It's just, you know, him being a little reflective and things of that nature. But is it one of the things that I'm getting from the exit interviews and the quotes that he's saying is I think he wants to stay, but he can't turn down the money, which is that's a dangerous combination, right? Like when your decision could potentially be 100% money motivated, that's dangerous, you know, in Malik Monk's case, because you could be going somewhere where you're not necessarily sold on going. You're not sold on the basketball aspect there, but they're offering you $22 million and you feel like you have to do it. If I was, you know, trying to put a bid in for Malik to stay, I'd be like, think about that, man. It can't be 100% money motivated.
Yeah, I think he understands that too. And, you know, like, look, this is just one of those situations that every once in a while happens in the NBA where a player outplays the value of their contract by a long shot. And then you're stuck with this dilemma of, is there a way to bring him back? And Malik was very clear, like he said, you know, I could go get more money somewhere else and be in a much worse NBA basketball like situation. And he's got to weigh that in. It's part of the calculus of what's going to happen moving forward. And it's kind of his agent's job to bring him like the two or three best opportunities and then have him look at those opportunities and say yes or no. And, you know, again, Malik, the Kings aren't unique in this situation. And I'll keep saying this. This isn't anyone's fault. Like you had a player who realistically had just kind of bounced around a little bit. He really didn't have a lot of success in his first four seasons in the NBA. He finds himself on a Lakers squad where he did find some success. I think De'Aaron Fox, you know, pitched to Malik to come to Sacramento. But I also think that De'Aaron pitched to the Kings to bring Malik to Sacramento. And like, look, this is a guy, like, trust me, he's better than what we've seen. And if we give him the opportunity, he might be able to fit like this really unique position that we need. And so all of those things are going to factor in at the end of the day. But like, look, NBA players only have a certain amount of time in the league. You know, they only have a certain amount of time that they make money. And that's most of the money they're going to make in their entire lifetime. You know, once you retire, you might never, ever, ever come close to matching your final year salary, like combined the rest of your life. And so I don't want to begrudge somebody a big payday, because at the end of the day, you know, this is their livelihood. It's their life. You know, NBA players play till they're 35, and a lot of them live till they're 75, 80, like everyone else. And so you got to make as much money as possible when you're in the game. And I get that. And so, and I also think his teammates get that, the Kings get that, and just really in a perfect situation, he would be back. But there is no perfect solution to that. The perfect solution is that no one offers them more than $17.4 million and he just comes back to Sacramento and we don't have to worry about this situation.
We're going to come back. We're going to try to get James's audio correct here a little bit. But either way, we're going to talk more Kings basketball with James Hamm, who was at exit interviews today here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news,
you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We weren't exactly able to correct the issue. We still got James. We do have to give you the keyword to enter over at ESPN1320.com for your chance to win a $500 gift card. And that keyword is tip-off. Head over to ESPN1320.com right now. Click on the Nothing But Net giveaway and enter the keyword tip-off right now for your chance to win a $500 gift card. James Hamm is going to join us here in just a heartbeat. I'm watching James. I think, James, we're sticking with this camera and working with that audio. Do we got James Hamm? We don't have James Hamm. So let's try this, James. Position the camera to be your camera, because I know why we don't have you. It's my fault. I have to bring this on the screen. That's why.
Yeah.
So can you say something now, James? Oh, wait. We can't get audio through this. You got to call in. It's the only way we could do it. The problem's the computer, guys. I'm so sorry. Just do the setup that we had before. I don't know what happened that killed this. But all I could say is thank God it happened today and not Friday when we were out at Sky River Casino.
Right. That's for sure.
Man. This is the appropriate way for the Kings offseason to start, is for this mess.
Yeah, the damn Kings offseason. Yeah. Why does it have to be the offseason? This wouldn't have happened if they would have won on Friday.
I don't think it would have. No. James, let's try this. We understand the stream can hear him. The problem is the rest of the world on the radio can't hear him. Hammer, Casey asked this question earlier. De'Aaron talked about it, missing free throws, losing to bad teams. Are the issues, because we've gone over the different scenarios for the Kings to improve and that there's probably a realistic version of a run it back-ish. Are the issues that just absolutely plagued the Kings this year, are they correctable?
I don't think so. Like, I think that this team can be equal to or slightly better than they were last year. But, you know, like De'Aaron Fox talked about, the 51 wins if they would have not bricked all those free throws. So, you get better as a free throw shooting team, you got a shot. But I don't think that either way, that doesn't make this team a championship contender, right? So that should be the point. You're going into year three of a build, and you would hope that you would start to ramp up. You can take a step back in year two, but you would hope that year three would be a major step forward and year four would be a major step forward. And in order to take those major steps, you know, it's not like they can put some of these guys like on the stretcher machine and make them taller and longer athletes. They just can't. So, I mean, for me, this team had a glaring hole last year. It had a glaring hole at last year's trade deadline, a glaring hole in the offseason, a glaring hole at this trade deadline. And it was for this like very specific type of player that could go out and do something different against Brandon Ingram or against, Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or Kevin Durant. And like those players are difficult to come by, but the Kings have like this weird aversion to them. They don't draft them. They don't search for them outside of Keegan Murray. And so to me, yeah, there has to be some changes, but you know, again, I say it all the time. It's, you know, the first year of the Sacramento Kings in 1998/99 season, it had Vernon Maxwell. It had John Berry. Olivier Sejois was your starting shooting guard. Jason Williams, a young Peja Stojakovic coming off the bench behind Corliss Williamson. And even that year, I think you picked up Scott Pollard midseason. It wasn't until year two, year three, year four that the real Kings team that we remember takes shape. And I just feel like this team is in the same spot. Like, they've got a really good nucleus. They've got the players you need to build around. Now it's on Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox to go out and find the right pieces to integrate into the system alongside those guys. And I think the Keon Ellis experience, it shows you, like, it doesn't have to be something crazy outlandish, but it's got to be a better fit. And sometimes that's what it means. Sometimes you just need something that's different, not something that's better. And so that's where, if I'm Monty McNair, I attack this off season with a real intensity to go find something that makes more sense for this roster, whether it be at the two, the three, the four, the backup five, the backup one, wherever it might be. You have to maybe bring in two or three players that are going to fight for rotational minutes on this team.
All right, Hammer, I got three scenarios I want to lay out for you, and you tell me which one you would pick or you think is most likely. Scenario number one, they use, you know, the universal deal that we've been talking about, something of that nature with Harrison, Herter, Davion, to go get a guy that, like I keep saying, has some warts to him, right? Like, a good, talented player, but maybe the fit isn't seamless. Maybe his contract isn't great. Maybe, he's on the final deal of a final year of a contract where he could just leave you for nothing. We're thinking a guy like Zach LaVine, a guy like Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, Lauri Markkanen came up. There are downsides. There are pros and cons to this player. That's scenario one. The second one is, you say, I want somebody that's a little more surefire, somebody that I trust a little bit more, that is here for the long haul, is a better player, all this other stuff. Just throwing a name out there, we're thinking Mikal Bridges, but it costs you Keegan Murray. Do you think that's a scenario? Or, like we just talked about, scenario number three, a little bit of just a run it back type of situation. You add a random guy that, you know, might help you, but isn't a game changer, of saying like a random Malcolm Brogdon type guy. You know what I mean? But for the most part, the core of this group is coming back. Which one of those three scenarios interests you the most?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, first of all, I think there's always a scenario out there that we don't know about. And that's the one thing that I would point to. So, I mean, you bring up Lauri Markkanen. I don't think the Utah Jazz are going to go away from Lauri. You brought up, Mikal Bridges. And, like, look, if the Nets decide to go away from Mikal Bridges, and I don't think they're going to, there are so many other teams out there that have so much more to offer than you do if you're the Kings. So that's going to be difficult as well. So that's where I would say, like, look, there are other deals out there that are more on the fringe that we're not thinking of. And what they can't do is, in my opinion, is option three, where you're going out there and basically, I mean, like, for all intents and purposes, you're saying go get another Chris Duarte. That's not going to work. You need to have a player that's better than they can step on the floor and actually have an impact. And I don't know, whatever it is with Chris Duarte talked about it a little bit today. Like, he's never played complicated basketball like this. Like, this was his first time in a system that was built like this. And he struggled. He was honest. Like, and I think he could come back and be a better player next season if he really spent a lot of time understanding and figuring out and sort of learning the playbook from top to bottom. But at the Kings need to, like, they need a top six of the rotation player. And that's if they don't lose Monk. If they lose Monk, they need two of them. You know, I'd even say if you lose Monk, you can get away with like a secondary, like 3-and-D guy, but then you have to have a really, really huge swing for the fence with a big time scorer, because Malik provides so much of that. So Yeah, it's complicated. I don't know how Monty's going to like totally view this offseason, except for the fact that I think he's going to be very clear that he's going to continue to look for the types of players that have high basketball IQ, that maybe have a little bit more maturity to them. You know, if he's going to draft it at 13, which we did learn, I don't know if you guys saw that, the Kings won the coin flip this afternoon with the Golden State Warriors. And so as of today, they have the 13th best odds of moving in the draft lottery. And the Golden State Warriors are number 14. So if neither of them move up, the Kings draft at 13, the Warriors draft at 14. That just happened maybe 15 minutes ago.
Watch the Warriors move up because they won the coin flip.
Yeah.
Warriors pick is goes to Portland unless it's in the top four.
Watch the Warriors move up because of the coin flip.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, and I think it's a 1% chance. If you're the 13th pick, it's a 1% chance of moving up. If you're the 14th pick, it's like a 0.5% chance. But because you tied, now you both have like a 0.7% chance of moving up. And then just the Kings would get the higher pick. So, yeah, I mean, like, look, it doesn't seem like it matters, but it might actually matter at the end of the day. The pick at number 13 might be a better player than the pick at number 14. We don't know. And so we're going to have to wait and see how that goes. But my point, though, is that these guys have a type. If they're drafting at number 13, you're going to see a very similar type. You're going to see a sophomore, junior, senior, maybe a 21, 22-year-old prospect, someone who's already showed us who they can be, as opposed to maybe a really intriguing G League Ignite or European prospect. And that's just kind of like reading the tea leaves of who this team has been and how they sort of attack the draft. And then, like, look, I wouldn't be surprised if they trade the pick again. I wouldn't be surprised if they're out there aggressively searching out ways to improve this roster using that 14th pick. Because maybe that 13th pick, because maybe it does give you a little bit of leeway to pull off maybe something like what you did last year with Rashawn Holmes, just at a much higher level. So as opposed to a 2-year, $25 million deal you're trading, maybe it's a 2-year, $35 or $36 million contract and a $6 million player and another player that you're trying to move off of to get rid of that pick. Mm-hmm. So I just think that it's going to be intriguing how they attack this draft. It's going to, like, how do they assess? We'll learn more from Monty McNair on Wednesday when he has his exit interview and Mike Brown has his exit interview. Mm-hmm. But I do think we're going to learn more about, like, where they feel like they went wrong and whether it's a take a major step back season or just reload and retool and come back with something different.
Be it Keegan, maybe Malik in a different position, should one of the Kings' focal points this offseason be finding a scorer that is just below De'Aaron Fox?
I mean, maybe. It definitely, if you lose Malik, I would say yes. So, yeah, if you could find a 20-point-per-game guy, a guy who walks in the door and is a bucket, yeah. But if you keep Monk, then I don't think you really need to be that aggressive with a score. I still think the, like, long, athletic, 3-and-D type, you know, 2-3-4 is where you should head. And I kind of say that because, like, look, Keegan made this point today. Like, we all think of him as like this young player who's going to take like these definitive steps every step of the way. But I think what we forget is that hidden inside of each of these steps are a bunch of little steps that he's still going through and that he can't skip. And so part of that is, like he talked about late in the season, this is the first time he'd ever been asked at the NBA level to, like, all of a sudden become a lead scorer. Like, hey, we need you to be the number two scorer on this team. And all of us can sit here and go, wait, wasn't that expected from you off the jump? And the answer is, like, no. What was expected was that Domas was going to average 20 and that De'Aaron was going to average 25 to 27. And then you had a bunch of guys who were around 15 points a game, 13, 14, 15, and Herter and Harrison and Monk and Keegan, when you get elevated like that late in the season because two of these guys are gone, I think that's when, you know, Keegan learned something about himself, and he learned something about, like, taking a step forward and being more aggressive, but also, like, figuring out that he's got to do that every single night, because he did it against the Warriors, and then he fell apart against New Orleans. And so these are all the baby steps that we like to just skip over. And, you know, I think a lot of people could look at even like the Malik Monk situation and say, you know, well, Malik is out there looking for a starting job and all this stuff. And it's, you know, Malik Monk has been really good for the Sacramento Kings, but he was really good last year in 22 minutes per game. And this year he is really good in 26 minutes per game. And there's a big step that Malik has to take in order to become like who De'Aaron Fox is. And I'm not even saying like the 27 points per game. I'm saying the 35 to 36 minute per game guy who's relied on for 82 games or 75 games. And Monk hasn't got to that point yet. And so, again, there's all these steps that players have to take in their progression. And a lot of people get so angry and they want their players to skip these steps, but it's just not how it always works. And so I do think that the Kings have like still have a lot of flexibility in who and what they can be. But I'd also caution, like, one of your options, Kenny, was to trade, you know, Keegan Murray and try to go all in on something. Like, that's just, to me, it's not, you're not there yet. You still have a player who just took a leap up to like 15 plus points per game. And next season he should take a leap up to 18. And then after that, you hope that he can get to 20 something. And that's, again, like the natural progression of a player.
Yeah, I hear you, you know, but I'm glad that you brought up what we're expecting next year. I mean, it can change throughout the summer. We'll talk about it some more, I'm sure. But
only have a whole off season.
What are we expecting next summer or next year from Keegan? Because we keep talking about the small steps.
Well, we can figure that out. I was going to point this out earlier, but he went from 12 points to 15 points per game, mm-hmm. which is that's in the range of what a lot of people were asking for, isn't it?
I thought he had a good second season. It wasn't spectacular, but I thought he got better. I thought it was
he showed signs of being spectacular.
Yeah, I thought it was a good second season. I didn't have any problem with his year. But the only thing was, I don't know if and when he's going to be ready to be that next level scorer for you.
Yeah.
And the whole point with that, James, is, and we kind of started the show like discussing, I think we're both in agreement. We like Mike Brown. We like Monty McNair. We don't want him to leave. But I was talking more to the effect of, if they don't get to the playoffs again next year, is the seat hot for Mike and Monty?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say so. And even this season, I mean, I think that there's some uneasiness. You know, we heard the, I don't know if you guys read the article by Sam Amick this morning, that Mike only has 1 year guaranteed left on his deal, and then he has a team option for the following year. And that makes him, realistically, it makes him a lame duck coach going into this next season. And that's not, like, everything I'm hearing is that's not what he's looking for. He definitely would like a long-term deal, and he would like that situation buttoned up, and he'd also like to have his salary sort of, like, commensurate with what other major coaches are making at this point. I don't know that like anything is going to happen like anytime soon with these guys, but like the fact is you didn't have a successful season. I don't think this was a failure of the season, but it wasn't nearly as successful as you'd hoped. And now the third season of this, this team has to take a leap, but it can't just be a natural leap with the players that you have. That's not the way it goes. You need to add to the puzzle. And as of right now, you know, like, I don't know how they do that. Like, their off season is not going to be easy. And keeping your 2024 pick, that didn't make it any easier at all, right? That what just happened where they kept their pick. Because now they have this issue that they can't really trade 25, 26, or 27. So So it's difficult to offer someone anything in immediate help to get their team better. And it's not like you have hiding on your bench a whole bunch of young players that you could throw at somebody and say, well, I would give you this young player and then a 2028, a 2030 first round pick. Like, you're a little tied up with what you have to offer. And so again, it's a lot more complicated than just going out and swapping out every extra piece on your roster for something different.
Not to backtrack too far, I said this at the beginning of the show to Casey. I'll say it to you. Any thought of Mike Brown not being the head coach of this team moving forward is ridiculous. If that's a Vivek Ranadive thought, it's ridiculous. If it's a Monty McNair thought, it's ridiculous. Mike Brown needs to be the head coach of this team moving forward. And the idea, as you kind of said there, James, that this season was a failure is ridiculous. No, it wasn't successful. You still are a 46-win team. Again, it wasn't enough to get you to the postseason. That sucks. The goal is you have to make the playoffs. You have to have a shot at this championship. But the idea of moving on from Mike Brown is absurd.
Oh, I totally agree. No, I don't think that should be part of any conversation at all right now. But that doesn't mean, look, we've seen this movie before, right? I joke about it all the time. This is like, you know, the Sacramento Kings job is like when you go to the grocery store to buy a bag of chips, like during the week of the Super Bowl, you buy two, you get two free. This job has always been that you get 2 years of a coach and he gets 2 years for free. So he gets to walk away and collect a gigantic salary for 2 years because that's sort of the culture that you built. This isn't the time for that. This is the time to stay the course. It's a time to support, to get the right pieces. And like, look, how you gave the coach exactly the same roster he had the year before. And that roster had a ceiling. And it got hidden with the team playing really, really well in the second half of the season. And then really a good showing in the first round of the playoffs against the reigning champs. Whether one team was a 3 seed or one team was a 6, it doesn't matter. You're playing a team you just have way more experience than you did. But for my money, look, this is a moment where you go out and you try to find the Doug Christie trade that they found years ago. You try to find the Mike Bibby trade that worked out so well for the Kings. This is where you start piecing the other things together because everyone can see what this thing looks like. The build, the base of this thing, the foundation is very strong. Now add to the foundation. You know, this is about cosmetic changes as much as it is anything else. And then you hope that you find lightning in a bottle and maybe something special happens. But this isn't the time to scrap things, in my opinion.
I'm with you. I'm with both of you guys in that situation. But when I bring that up, you know, I think, James, you say the same thing. It's not necessarily what should happen. It's probably what would happen in that situation. Mm-hmm. Is they would be under fire, you know, for not making the playoffs. And I'm not saying people need to lose their job, but I do agree with the sense of urgency of, hey, all right, you got the 1 year kind of mulligan, like things didn't go, there was growing pains or whatever. You got to make the playoffs next year. You got to make the playoffs next year, you know, or I just see not only those Coach Brown and Monty McNair, I think players are in question at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I totally agree. Yeah, I think players should be in question right now. Like, you got players on this team that didn't step up in crucial moments or in crucial months. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certainly players on this team that you know, you can upgrade without any question. But that doesn't mean that the foundation of the team is bad. You know, like we're talking about, like, again, like doing some landscaping in the front of your house and maybe doing repainting your trim. We're not talking about like tearing the whole house down and starting over. And I think that's something that Kings fans are like, unfortunately, so used to. It's like, oh, this didn't work. Let's go ahead and try something completely different. And that's going to take another 2 to 3 years to figure out. But everyone will be patient. No one's going to be patient anymore because partially because they got a taste of the good life and partially because when the owner got a taste of the good life, he decided to increase ticket prices as if he had, like, you know, a Beverly Hills mansion. And he didn't have a Beverly Hills mansion yet. He had a nice track home in Natomas. And he you know, jacked up the rates as much as he could. And, you know, that's on them to make money and to be business people. But, you know, that feeling, that's what happened in the 2006 going into 2007 season. You had overplayed your hand so much with a fan base and asked so much and kept raising your rates. And then when things went south, you didn't recover fast enough and realize that you had to drop your tickets back down, and you ran a lot of fans out. So I'm hoping that they don't make wholesale changes right now.
Yeah, I think the unique thing, you brought this up, and as I mentioned, we'll probably talk more about Sam and Ant-Man's article in The Athletic tomorrow. But where Mike fits in terms of coaching contracts, like Pop, I think, got like $16 million. Steve Kerr got 17 or 16 million per. And then you have kind of the outlier, at least as it pertains to the team, in Monty Williams getting that 13 per year that he got. So where Mike fits in that, he hasn't won multiple titles in the way that Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich have won. Of course, he's won titles with both of them, but that's a little bit different. I think he is just as an accomplished coach, if not more so. I think he's more so of an accomplished coach than Monty Williams is. But I don't know that necessarily means he needs to be at 14 or 15 million. You know, Monty Williams is kind of the Rudy Gobert trade of coaching contracts. Like, that was the number that Detroit needed to get him. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what his value is to the rest of the league. But if I'm Mike Brown's agent, I'm starting at a double digit. I'm starting at 10 million. That's where and I don't know what Mike makes now, but I'm assuming it's less than that. That's where the conversation starts. In my opinion, it starts in the range of 10 million per year. And you kind of go from there. That's the dicey part in all of this, is we don't look at it the same way, but coaching contracts take shape in a very similar vein to the way that player contracts do. You know, the Grayson Allen deal, as it relates to Malik Monk, like, Mike saw Monty Williams' deal. He saw Pop's deal, Steve Kerr's deal. He saw all of that and thought, well, this is going to affect my next contract in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. At this point, I would be surprised. I mean, like, look, the number that is kind of floating out there that I've heard is, you know, the $10 to $12 million range, but, like, look, that seems fair.
It's like, completely rational.
And it seems fair in today's market.
Mm-hmm.
Today's market is not 2 years ago market, and that's where I think Monty really changed the complexity. Monty had to take the money almost for all of the other coaches. You know, he didn't want that job. At least it sure didn't sound like or look like he wanted the job in Detroit. He turned it down multiple times. And then
there were times this year where it looked like he didn't want the job.
Yeah. Well, hey, like, it's a tough thing to go through and to go rebuild a team again and again and hope that some of your young players pan out, and then you get to the trade deadline and they trade away all your veterans. And then this offseason, they'll go out and go get veterans again, and then they'll trade them away a year from now. So it's not easy. But at the same time, like the contract that Monty got was, he kind of took one for the team for all NBA head coaches. And now everybody is expecting to make more money because of that. And that's just the way it goes. And, you know, it can be relayed to a little bit to, like, the Malik Monk situation. Like, if you want to sign a guy to a 3-year deal with a 4th-year option, which is what we're hearing that he had, a 3-year deal with a 4th-year option, and that is a team option, and that team option means that the team can walk away from you at any time. Like, look, that means that this next season you're a lame duck. You got one season left where you know you're under contract. And if I'm Mike Brown and I just took a team who had missed the playoffs for 16 consecutive seasons, put up a 48 and a 46 win team season in year one and year two, yeah, I would want to either make sure that I'm going to be there long term, or have the door open for me to go to a different group that is much more serious on building a long-term winner.
something to look.
It's gonna be a long off season. Yeah,
look into this summer. Anything else stand out from anybody else that talked today on their exit interviews? You know, just vibe check. You know, anything just kind of, you know, raise your antennas or anything?
Yeah. I think number one, having JaVale McGee just definitively say, I have no interest in retiring. I thought that was one interesting thing. I thought the conversation with Sasha Vezenkov is spectacular, like all around. I said he talked like very passionately about Malik. I think he talked about how difficult it is to go from European basketball, where you're playing like once a week or maybe twice a week, to, you know, NBA basketball, where you're playing 3 to 4 times a week, and the athleticism and speed and pace is like, all of it is so much different and just like eye opening. And also I asked him about, going from being an MVP to, being a role player and how difficult that is. And I think that he was like very clear and honest about that, just about how difficult this season had been for him to kind of take that step. So that's a good one. There's all kinds of good stuff. Like Kevin Huerter, I thought was very honest and forthright about his bad season and like sort of the mental toll it took and how he was knocked off kilter sort of multiple times during the season, whether it was because of his role or because he was going through slump or whatever it might be. So yeah, a lot of good stuff in today's conversations.
You think Sasha's back for sure?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, he can't walk away this year. He can the next year, but yeah, he can't walk away this coming season. He does have, well, there's a team option for his third season, but for right now, I think he'll be back. And like, look, I don't think he said he doesn't regret coming over at all, that he made the right decision to come over. It's just like, it was difficult, and like learning how difficult that is, you have to go through it yourself because everyone is different. And, you know, it's a lot different than a young player coming over when they're going into the draft or something. This is, it was definitely a challenge for him.
I'd like to see him have a little bit of a bigger role next year. Hopefully, you know, he makes the adjustments that he needs to, but I think his shooting, and we always talk about space on the floor. I don't know what the numbers specifically said. I thought he shot the ball really well, and he has that ability to space the floor. Decent rebounder as well. I'd like to see him get a little bit more of a look next year.
Yeah, I think so too. But again, it depends on who's playing alongside him and what kind of makeup your team has for next season. You know, I definitely could see like a guy like Alex Len being back. And Alex Len is good for Sasha Vezenkov to play alongside him. You know, I think Trey Lyles has developed into a leader, but I don't think Trey and Sasha are necessarily a good mix together unless you have a super, super athletic two or super athletic backup five that can block shots. It's all about, you know, the ingredients. I always like compare these players and the way they fit together. Like the original Batman with Michael Keaton, where like you had to avoid wearing the deodorant and putting on the eyeliner or it would like kill you. That's kind of like where I always look at this. Like it's weird how some pieces fit together and then others just don't work at all. And they're just so detrimental to a team. And you don't even really know it until you're 10 or 15 or 20 games in. And then by that time, you're like, well, maybe it's this other ingredient that's the problem. And you're always kind of chasing it the whole season. So yeah, like finding the right pieces, it's a lot more difficult than it should be. But I think Sasha, for me, it's about finding the right pieces to support him. And is he a big enough player in your plan to do that, to make sure that you're finding the right pieces for him? Or is he one of those pieces that if you can't find the right pieces for him, should he go somewhere else? And so I think, again, there's so many things the Kings have to consider this offseason.
Mike and Monty Wednesday.
Mike and Monty on Wednesday.
Okay. Very good. Well, we certainly, look forward to that. Appreciative of James's coverage today, at media day or at exit interviews. And, you get full coverage of that with the insiders, tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. We're going to step out. We're going to head over to 102.5. You can stay put here. We've got Knicks Sixers next.
Hey, go New York. Go New York. Go.
Here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Knicks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.